Having retired from my job as a postman in Dublin, after 35 years with a tidy sum and a small pension, I decided to leave my rental accommodation and buy a small house in the country. As a single man with no family, I could manage all right on my pension. I bought a house. A week later I moved in. It was a lonely cottage just outside a village, but it was also lovely. I was there a few days when one night there was a knock on the door. It was a man and his son. They introduced themselves as Dennis and Michael. "We're neighbours of yours, and we'd like to welcome you to the neighbourhood," they said. I brought them in and chatted away and gave them a drop of whiskey. After a while, Dennis, the father, asked me if he could use the hose in the garden to wash his car. "No problem," I said. While he was doing that, I talked away to his son. "He loves that old car," his son told me. "He has washed it every day since he bought it." They thanked me for the whiskey and told me they'd see me the following night in the pub down the road. There was no sign of them in the pub the following night, so I asked the owner if he knew two people by the names of Dennis and Michael that were living in the area. "No Dennis and Michael around here," he replied. "If there was, I don't know them." I sat there having a pint and looking at the pictures on the wall. It was then my eyes fell upon a picture of Dennis and Michael. I called the owner and told him about the picture. "Show me," he said. "That's a picture of Dinny and Mickey. That's what they're known around here as. But you could not have met them last night, because they're dead. They left here one night, and on the way home they crashed into the wall, and both of them were killed. Dinny was a bit odd, but a nice man. He loved that old car. He used to wash it every day. Oh, by the way," he added, "they are neighbours of yours. They're lying in the graveyard next door to you." Isn't it exciting? A young woman lives to regret her involvement in her mother-in-law's death. That's the title of the story, Revenge from the Other Side. I haven't had a day's peace since I first set foot in this house. It's brought nothing but bad luck to me and my family. If that wasn't enough, the neighbours think I'm a witch and a murderer. And it's all the fault of that woman, Sadie Cleary. She never forgave me for marrying her son Tom. Unlike most of the couples around here, my marriage to Tom Cleary wasn't a made match. We fell for one another on the first day we met at the crossroads near Carahanna. We were married within the year, and we've hardly been apart since that day. 5 of our children are still alive. The eldest, Katie, is 13. She's due to finish school this year and has been offered a position in Leonardo's Drapers at Athdowley. At least she had been offered a position until word got out about our troubles. I hope they won't try to renege on their promise now. We have a fine farm, 40 acres of good land and 10 acres of bog. I know that's nothing compared to the farms in the Midlands and places like that, but it's big for these parts, where most of our neighbours don't have 2 halfpennies to rub together. Tom inherited a farm when his father died. That was shortly after we started going out together in the spring of 1900. The cause of all my troubles was Tom's promise to his dying father, in return for inheriting the farm, he would look after his mother for the entire rest of her life. He swore that he'd always keep a roof over her head, and that she could stay in the house and call it home for as long as she lived. God bless him for making that promise. It ruined our life together. Sadie Cleary never accepted me as a new woman of the house. She hated me from the day she first clapped eyes on me until the day she died. According to her, I couldn't cook to save my life. I was useless at milking cows and rearing children. She told the world, her son, her grandchildren, the neighbours, anyone who would listen, how useless I was and how little she thought of me. She told everybody. She even turned my own firstborn Katie against me. But no matter how bad things were while she was still alive, it got 10 times worse after she went to the other side. I'll never forget the day she died. It was a beautiful spring morning. The children were at school and Tom had gone to Bilku to buy a heifer. Sadie and myself were the only ones in the house. She went out, as she always did, to feed the scraps left over from the breakfast to the ducks in the pond below the house. She'd been gone a while when I heard a terrible scream. I ran out as fast as my legs could carry me down the yard, heading in the direction of the scream. When I reached the pond, there was Sadie in the water, hands flailing and roaring like a jackass. I tried to reach her, but my arm just wouldn't stretch far enough. Then I saw a long branch lying close by. I thought of picking it up, and thought again, and left it there. I'm sure she knew what I was thinking. My last memory of her before she went down is this venomous look in her eye, as if to say, "I know what you've done, you wagon. I'll get you for this, Maisie Mulligan." And she did. The first sign of trouble came at the wake. The drink was flowing freely, and the women's cries and wails were ebbing and flowing like waves on the seashore. All the while, young Katie sat by the bed, silently and unmoving, staring blankly into space. She was clasping one of her grandmother's lifeless hands in hers, and stroking it gently with the other hand. Then, unnoticed at first, the bed with the corpse lying on it started to rise off the floor, slowly, steadily, apparently of its own accord. The bed swayed slightly from side to side and continued to raise until it was about 9 inches off the floor. The singing and chatting died away as the mourner's eyes fixated on the bed, terrified, all except Katie. Suddenly the bed's four big iron legs crashed to the floor, like they were being pushed down by a supernatural force. Every window and door shook with the force of the crash, and people dropped their glasses in fright. The corpse seemed to jump up in the bed as if it had been frightened by the fall. Then silence. The deadly hush came over the house. Everything went calm. Gradually the hubbub of the conversation resumed, first in hushed tones, then louder as the night wore on and the drink took hold. I could hear them at times. Hated Tom's mother. Wanted to be the woman of the house. Pushed the poor creature. Let him think that what they like, she's dead. A couple of days later, two policemen called in the house wanting to talk to me. I remember the day well. It was the same day the army shot three of the rebels who had taken over the GPO in Dublin at Easter week. The policemen quizzed me up and down about what happened on the morning that the old hag fell into the water. They tried every trick to get me to admit that I pushed her in, but I was too smart for them. I stuck to my story, of course. I said nothing about the branch and not using it to try and save her. What they don't know won't trouble them. Within a week, strange things started to happen in the house. At first, there was chairs rising from the floor, moving on their own accord from one end of the room to the other. The tilly lamp being quenched when there wasn't a puff of wind. Pictures falling off the wall, frightening. But I could live with it. After a day or two, things got worse. Knives and forks lifted from the table by unseen hands and pelted with terrible force across the room, often missing someone's head by inches. Then the children's clothes started to disappear, one at a time. I looked high up and low down, but not a sign of the missing clothes could be found anywhere. I did my best to replace whatever was taken, but it got more and more difficult to keep the children and ourselves looking respectable. Within a couple of weeks, there weren't clothes left to send the children to school, and we stopped going to Mass on Sundays. The school inspector came round and asked why the children were being kept at home. I made up some cock and bull story about them having chicken pox. I know they didn't believe me, but I managed to get rid of them for a while at least. Things came to a head a fortnight ago. I was alone in the kitchen. Billy Doran, the postman, was cycling past the house when a crowbar came flying from the house over the half door aimed straight at his head. He ducked. The crowbar buried itself in the ditch beside him. Billy, normally a placid man, jumped off his bike in a terrible rage. He charged into the house, demanding to know who flung the crowbar. I could hold back no longer. I burst out crying and told him all that had been happening. Billy went straight to the priest. Father Greeley was down the following day and claimed the house was possessed. He said a load of prayers, all of them in Latin, so I couldn't understand a word. He said they were to cast out devils. I don't have much time for the craw thumping, but the prayers worked. Immediately afterwards, the thumping and banging and the throwing things, everything stopped. Next day, I went down to the pond where the old woman had fallen in, and there on the bank were the children's clothes, all neat and dry and folded neatly. Isn't that an incredible story? Strange things happen, strange things that we do not understand. I know. This is Barry Mack.